The Copernicus Climate Change Service has recently come out with a report that summarizes the year 2025. To get a sense of what's in that report, KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Atiyah Jafar, the 350.org Canada country manager.
2025 has just passed us. What can you tell us about that year in terms of climate change?
Yeah, 2025 was a very sobering year. It was the third hottest year on record, which made it the first time that in a three-year period that as a globe we've exceeded the 1.5 degree Celsius limit that we were trying to achieve in the Paris Climate Agreement. Air temperature over global land areas was second warmest, while the Antarctic saw its warmest annual temperature on record. It was devastating in so many different ways. We know that, you know, in Canada, where I live, there was an unprecedented wildfire season. I mean, it was the second worst wildfire season in Canadian history. More than 6,000 wildfires in every province and territory, impacting over 8.3 million hectares that burned during that time.
Wow. And other countries were also affected by wildfires?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just thinking about right now, even just the 1 year mark of the LA wildfires that were also happening, you know, this time last year. And yeah, not just wildfires, cyclones, drought, extreme rainfall. It resulted in a collective economic loss of $120 billion. The LA wildfires were the costliest, with $60 billion in damages. And just 2 weeks into 2026, we're seeing the same trend. Unfortunately, it's devastating. We're seeing wildfires ravage parts of Australia, Argentina, and South Africa. There's a severe snowstorm that has come into Europe. So yeah, it was a devastating year, and we're seeing the devastation continue, unfortunately.
And we've been hearing for a long time about this 1.5 heating threshold. And meanwhile, we have an administration in the U.S. that seems to be going the opposite direction. What would you say about that? How much does that affect what's going on in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to recognize that 1.5 degrees Celsius was a really important number that we landed in the Paris Climate Agreement. And we are coming dangerously close to crossing that really, really critical line, a line that means life or death, because every fraction of a degree of heating means, you know, every fraction of a degree of heating means more lives are lost, more ecosystems are damaged, and more communities are facing irreversible harm. So it's really, really important to prevent surpassing that 1.5 degree threshold. And what we're seeing just with the withdrawal of the United States and the direction that the U.S. government, but also other governments are taking, it's the absolute wrong direction. It's something that our climate can't afford. And it is isolating these governments from our future, the future that we know we deserve. We know we need to transition away from fossil fuels. We know that's something that even if you look at the economic trends, you can see they're more favorable towards renewable energy. The world is collectively moving away from this toxic source of energy that is poisoning our climate and that is making the planet unlivable for so many people. Yeah, it's really disappointing to see. And we must move in the right direction.
So it sounds like you're saying that the people like Trump who say drill, baby, drill and more oil, they're going against a historical trend and eventually they'll be defeated, or will it go the other way where the planet will be destroyed?
Yeah, I think we are at a pretty critical fork in the road. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of different directions that we can go in. And it's very clear what science has told us. Science has told us that in order to secure a livable future for everyone, to ensure that we're avoiding the most devastating outcomes of the climate emergency, we must phase out fossil fuels. And it's really up to us to make sure that we go in this direction. I think it's up to people power, people across the world to rise up and send a really clear message for what we want. Because I would like to believe that the U.S. is isolated in the direction that they're going, but we are seeing really troubling trends across the world. We're seeing kind of like a permission that has been given to world governments as a result of Trump's actions. You know, even in Canada, there are pipeline projects that are back on the table that weren't even, you know, that were defeated a long time ago. There was no world in which they were considered conceivable at this stage in our fight against a climate emergency, but they're back on the table now. So we're seeing these really damaging trends, and it's up to us to rise up and fight back and ensure that that's not the direction that we go in. It's really important to ensure that we're fighting for a renewable energy future. And you know, we know that this is not a partisan issue. You know, I come from Pakistan, and Pakistan is leading the way with solar energy, and it has nothing to do with politics. It just has to do with the fact that it is a cheap, affordable form of electricity that is allowing people to have more energy security, and it's ensuring that the planet isn't, you know, polluted as a result. Like, people are seeing immediate impacts, immediate positive impacts in their life from solar energy. It's not like a right versus left issue. And I think what we have to do is ensure that we are moving forward in this collective direction globally as well. That we're realizing that renewables hold a lot of benefits for our future, but also for our immediate present. You know, the numbers speak for themselves, and it's really important to ensure that we can actually preserve that.
I do recall a time when it wasn't so much a political issue. I mean, if you go back to, say, the early 90s, George Bush, the first Bush, was president, and he talked about the dangers of climate change. But since then, it really has become almost a cultural issue among conservatives that this thing is a hoax, and we don't need to worry about it, and our technology can solve it. So, I mean, in a real politic way, it is a political issue.
Yes, yeah, it's absolutely a political issue in many countries, including the US and Canada, and that's a result of the power of the fossil fuel industry, right? It's the power of big oil to have a really strong hold on our politicians and our governments, which is extremely, extremely troubling because we know, regardless of your political stripes, none of us benefit when big oil and fossil fuel companies get richer. The wealth of the and power of the fossil fuel industry is something that we must fight back against, and it's something that is resulting in loss for the rest of us. So it's really important to recognize that, and it's really important to recognize that we cannot have fossil fuel companies, some of the richest companies on Earth, making decisions about our future and having such a stronghold on our politicians. So cutting this tie that big oil has over our politics is extremely important because, yeah, you're right. It's making this life or death issue, which is truly nonpartisan in every way because everyone is impacted by the climate emergency, it's turned it into a political issue. And that's something that's really important to fight back against. And it's really important to fight back against, at every level, whether it's having conversations at our dinner table with people that we might not necessarily agree with, but that we're connected to. It's about ensuring that we are holding all politicians to account. And it's also ensuring that we're like drawing visibility to all the ways in which the fossil fuel company has access to our politicians, to the halls where decisions are made.
Do you know how much of the world's oil production the U.S. is impacting?
That's a really good question. I
And
mean,
what it would mean if the U.S. went in the more ecological direction?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have all the numbers in front of me right now, but we know that the US obviously has access to massive carbon reserves. And beyond that, the US is, of course, extending its influence now over oil reserves outside of their political borders as well. And that is very dangerous. And it goes to show that, it is very instrumental for the United States to move in line with the rest of the world. But we also know that the rest of the world cannot wait for the US to catch up because the climate emergency is at our doorstep. Even if the US is stepping away from the Paris Climate Agreement, the climate emergency is not just simply pausing. You know, we must act in response. And I think that's the most important thing. In Canada, for example, we are pushing our politicians not to let Trump or the US determine what our energy or climate policies should be. We should be rising up and ensuring that we're acting in line with science, and that is something that the entire world should be doing. So there's an important role for powerful countries to play, but also if one of the powerful countries is not playing ball, that doesn't mean that the rest of the world stops. And if we are changing the world's relationship to oil, which a lot of countries have already implemented that transition, then that is kind of further isolating these bad actors that are not moving in line with science.
And what about the good actors? You mentioned Pakistan. What other countries are pursuing what would you call it, a soft energy path and trying to eliminate the use of fossil fuels?
Yes, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, I know that we are seeing global uptake in renewable energy. We know that countries like Nepal, Norway, we are seeing China lead, and these are China is a major global economic actor. There's huge potential for renewable energy to take hold, and there are just like there's so much potential across the world. In Canada, we are seeing renewable energy really it has expanded vastly, and a lot of the leaders in Canada are also Indigenous communities as well. Indigenous communities are leading the way to the transition. We're seeing such huge leadership when it comes to owning and developing renewable energy technology within Indigenous communities. So a lot of the leadership is there. We're seeing the potential of community-owned renewable energy projects, whether it's Indigenous-owned or owned by various different communities across the world, and people are seeing the immediate impact. We know that renewable energy also creates more jobs than the fossil fuel sector. We're seeing that renewable energy also leads to immediate impacts, like we talked about. Like, for example, in Pakistan, I was talking about how people are just immediately seeing the impact on their energy bills. They know that it's cheaper. They know that it disconnects them through to these unstable systems where they don't know whether or not they're going to have access to electricity. Renewable energy is creating energy security. And also, we are seeing that renewable energy is just something that's cleaning the air, and it's making the air more breathable. And that's an immediate impact as well. In addition to, we know the long-term impacts are phasing out fossil fuels and ensuring that we're playing a leading role when it comes to fighting the climate emergency. But yeah, there's so much potential. Other countries, Denmark, we know is leading the way. We know there's so much potential in countries like Spain and Portugal and the Netherlands and Germany.
And anything else you'd like to add to what you said?
Well, I think yeah, the cost is too high for us to not act. We must act. We know that 1.5 degrees. I remember being there when the Paris Climate Agreement was signed, and I remember there were folks there from Pacific Climate Nations that were saying that this is something that is not negotiable. That their lives, their countries are not negotiable. We're seeing waters rise. We're seeing entire villages in Fiji are being uprooted and relocated. We're seeing, smaller island nations having to plan for forced migration if the seas continue to rise. So, 1.5 is what's needed for so many people to survive. And it's really, really important to ensure that we are recognizing that this path that we're on is not the right path. And it's really important to make the changes to ensure that we fall into line with what science demands and recognize that this is life or death for everyone.
Hopefully, we will see a leap in consciousness soon on that issue.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. We need a fossil fuel phase out now. We know that this industry is just not compatible with a safe climate that we all deserve.
That's 350.org Canada Country Manager Atiyah Jafar speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on January 21st, 2026.